Why do we meditate?
You tell me why you meditate.
Well, okay. So I meditate because...
Let me pause you. Sorry, I'm going to ask you, and I'm going to come back to that question, but I want to ask you a question before that to help both of us answer the question. What do you mean by meditating? Well, what is meditating for you?
In the path that I've been on until now, I would consider meditating a quiet time of reflection.
Reflection on what?
The object, well, okay. So, generally speaking, right, a lot of people would say that meditation...
No, just be very specific. Meditation is a quiet time of reflection for you. What do you reflect on when you're meditating?
Until Sunday night, I was trying to concentrate on the breath in order to focus my mind, quiet my mind, and watch my thoughts without engaging with them.
Okay. That's fine. The reason one would watch one's breath or give your attention to your breath is because prior to that you were giving your attention to your thoughts and feelings, and that was upsetting you. So if you take your attention off your thoughts and feelings and you give them to, for instance, your breath is neutral. It's benign. It doesn't upset you to give your attention to your breath. It does upset you to give your attention to your feelings. You're feeling hurt or lonely or sad or angry and so on. And the breath, moreover, the breath is a transparent object, a relatively transparent object. It has no content. There's almost nothing there. So in the objective realm of experience, it to some degree mimics the presence of awareness, which is the 100% transparent and empty. And so focusing on the breath, it's not going all the way back to your true nature, but it is taking your attention off your thoughts and feelings and giving you temporary relief. As long as you're focusing on your breath and not on your feelings, you're no longer upset. As soon as you stop giving your attention to your breath, you go back to your feelings and you're upset again. So giving your attention to your breath doesn't uproot the cause. It doesn't either expose or uproot the cause of your suffering, but it does give you temporary relief from it. But that would be a good reason for reflecting on your breath, focusing on your breath. It's not what we do here, because here we don't just want temporary relief from our feelings. We want permanent relief from our feelings. We want lasting peace and happiness, not temporary peace and happiness. So it's not what we do here, but it's a reasonable thing to do. And certainly as a by way of preparation for what we do here. So as you say, until Sunday night you focused on your breath. What have you been doing since Sunday night?
I will... I start by focusing on each part of my body to relax it, and then I focus on my breath, and then I think about I follow your advice. So, that's what, because I found, I come to this through a mix of Christianity, Buddhism, and neuroscience.
Okay.
And I have to step my way down into it.
That's very good. That's very good. I like your description. When I asked you what you've been doing since Sunday night, you said, first of all, I relax my body, then I focus on my breath, and then I follow what you're doing. So that's good. You start with the outer layer of your experience, of yourself. The outer layer of your experience of yourself is your body. So you you scan your body, you relax any tensions in your body, that's good. Then your attention just goes in a bit further. You notice your breath. You focus on your breath. You didn't break it down into too many steps, but you might have said, I become aware of my thoughts. I become aware of any emotions that are present. So in this way, you just go back from your body to your breath, to your thoughts, to your feelings. You just keep on going back. That's what we do here. We keep on going back, but we don't stop. We don't allow our attention to rest on any particular object, like a sensation of your body or the breath or the thought or an emotion. We just keep on going back, gently and briefly becoming aware of each layer of experience, but not allowing our attention to rest on it. Keep on going back until, remember, attention is a stretching. You give your attention to your body, that's like the rubber band is stretched, and then it comes back to your breath, and then it goes back to your thoughts, and it goes back to your feelings, and it goes back to your deepest intuition, until eventually the attention ceases being directed or stretched towards anything. It comes all the way back to its source, the place from where it originates, which is the presence of awareness. And you rest there as that. And you're no longer giving your attention to that because you are that. You can only give your attention to something that is other than yourself. So it's this gradual relaxing of attention, the sinking back of attention. You walk your way back through your experience until you arrive, until you can't go back any further. You can't go back further in your experience than awareness or being. And once you've reached that, there's nothing for your attention to do anymore. Your attention has stopped being stretched. Attention has been relieved of its tension. And it's attention without tension is pure awareness. And then you just rest as that. You just abide. You've arrived on the Caribbean beach. You're in your deck chair. And then you stay there. Why? Because what you long for in life, above all else, is peace and joy and love. And peace and joy and love are the very nature of awareness. And we normally look for them out in the world. And we're all here precisely because that search for peace and happiness and love in the world failed us. That's why we're all here. And so here we go back to the true source of peace, happiness and love, which is our being, the presence of awareness. So that's the answer to your question as to why one might meditate.
Okay, I have one more question. Okay. Carry on. But why does it feel like work then? Why is it tiring?
It feels like work because do you like the analogy of John Smith and King Lear? Well, some people don't like. Some people just don't want to hear about King Lear again.
I don't want to provoke any resistance in you. It's just like, if there are themes during this retreat.
Okay, all right. So you understand the analogy.
Yeah.
John Smith is your true nature of awareness, and yeah, King Lear is the person you seem to be. So it's true that John Smith doesn't need to make an effort to be himself. He's just naturally himself. That's his natural state. So you might well ask, well, why does going back to being John Smith appear to be an effort if John Smith is naturally effortlessly himself? And the reason is because John Smith has given himself so fully to being King Lear that he's forgotten himself. He's lost himself in the content of his experience, the drama of King Lear. So he now feels, I am King Lear. He's identified himself with the thoughts, the actions and relationships of King Lear. So as King Lear, he has to make an effort to trace his way back. He has to counter. John Smith has lost himself in King Lear's. He's identified himself with King Lear's experience. So King Lear has to make an effort to counter that identification. He has to trace his way back, and he's swimming against the tide because John Smith's been performing King Lear on Broadway every night for the past 30 years.
Right.
It's a very well, So this strong...
My tide is not as strong as Greer's, but it hasn't been in existence for as long.
Okay, but you've been practicing it for a number of decades.
Yes.
In most of us, the tide is pretty strong. The habit is very strong. It has a momentum behind it. So most people feel my natural state is to be a person, to be a temporary, finite, separate self. We think that's natural. Well, if we think that's natural, then... And we think then being John Smith is something absolutely extraordinary. Being enlightened is just the most extraordinary. And we feel we have to make an effort to be that. We have to row against the tide to come back to being John Smith. But after to begin with, we just get a glimpse of being John Smith. And then the tide just pulls. We stop rowing and the tide pulls us downstream straight away. So then we have to row laboriously upstream again. We come back to being ourselves, to being John Smith. And therefore we stop rowing. Well, why, when we stop rowing, don't we just remain in our true nature? You got all the way back there. You stop rowing. You should just stay there. Why not? Because the tide's still flowing. The habit is still there. So you stop rowing. You don't remain as yourself. You flow downstream again. You find yourself, I am King Lear again. So you have to go back and forth. For most of us, very occasionally it's not the case, but for almost all of us, there is this back and forth. You row all the way back. You trace your way back through the layers of your experience. You arrive at yourself. You stay there. You stay there for a few moments or a few minutes. But the tide takes us again. The force of habit, the pull of experience takes us again. So we keep coming back, but each time we come back, we counteract the gravitational pull of experience. We weaken that pull of experience. So we begin to find it easier to go back, and when we arrive back at ourselves, we find ourselves able to stay there for longer. When we stop, and of course, we stop rowing. The tide's still flowing, but it no longer has any effect on us. The tide has to be really strong to pull us out again. But and occasionally, a really strong feeling or something really distressing in the world takes place, and we find ourselves drifting downstream again. But fewer and fewer experiences have the capacity to take us away from ourselves, and we begin to feel established. We begin to rest there. And then we no longer have to make an effort. Then we realize suddenly, I thought being John Smith was an extraordinary enlightened state that was maintained by practice and effort. Now I realize there's been a reversal of our perspective. Now I realize actually being John Smith is the natural state. That doesn't require effort. What really required an effort was identifying ourselves with King Lear's experience. Although we had become so accustomed to making that effort, we no longer realized it was an effort. But more and more we begin to feel that being John Smith, being our being, or being the presence of awareness, is just unnatural conditions. So less and less effort is required as time goes on. But if we need to make the effort, then we should make the effort. And I know this is not what you're saying, but we shouldn't say, being John Smith is ultimately effortlessly, therefore I'm not going to make an effort. If you feel you are King Lear and you don't make an effort, you're just going to stay suffering. So if you feel you are King Lear, then make the effort, whatever effort you need to make, to trace your way back to John Smith, to your true nature. And only when you can remain there effortlessly do you cease making an effort.
Okay, last question. When you're up there, are you John Smith or King Lear? Because
I'm John Smith, thoroughly enjoying playing King Lear.
Thank you.